Good morning.
Good morning.
You're welcome to sit comfortably or, you know, sit in meditation. I'm just going to speak this talk into the meditation. We're not going to have any discussion afterwards, so it's something you can just allow to drift in as you wish. But yes, comfortable sounds good. This dragon that we're riding, it's our constant and continual companion. It's not something we're just meeting here and calling forth to this retreat. It's with us and has been with us every day throughout our lives. And I'd like to explore some of the ways we meet it and some of the ways it is throughout these days and years and things that we go through. And I'm not sure if it's one dragon with many facets wearing many hats or many different dragons. And that's for you to explore in your own life. Does this feel like one dragon with all sorts of tricks and abilities and offerings? Or are there many dragons? You know, the encouragement here is just to kick off some exploration for us all to look into while we're here together with the opportunity to do so deeply. And I'm going to draw on dragons from our koans and stories and ancestral lore that's woven throughout our traditions. There are going to be images and lots of things offered here, and there's nothing to grab onto. Just let it wash through you, and what sticks, sticks, and what doesn't, doesn't. You might find something in particular resonates and something else doesn't. Just let it be. Trust the dragon, yeah? So to begin, the everyday experience of the dragon is what first comes to mind. When nothing in particular is going on, just getting up, doing what we do, going to work, coming home, being retired, figuring out what do I do with my life, whatever it is that you do, wherever you are, whatever particular point in your life you're at, just the one you encounter that accompanies you all the time. And so this poem that many of us will be familiar with from a retreat via Zoom not too long ago, to me speaks to this, the daily dragon. Since before anyone remembers, it's been clear, shining like silver. Though the moonlight suffuses it and the wind ruffles it, no trace of either remains. Now, I wouldn't dare to explain the secret of the stream bed, but I can tell you that the blue dragon is coiled there. So this stream bed of our daily doings, beneath it, the blue dragon, maybe coiled, maybe writhing about, maybe dancing and swimming deep in that Rio Abajo Rio, the river beneath the river, yeah? Playful at times, still at times, quiet at times, joyful at times. It's just, again, the one that we can feel its presence at times. Sometimes feel its movement. And sometimes there's just the knowing that it's there. And that's enough. Yeah. Feeling that support, the accompaniment, and the offering of that presence, that being, that knowing. Yeah. So I think that's its most common showing up, is just there again in the Rio Abajo Rio, with us always. But then we come to times in our lives where it's difficult and challenging. And in the realm of formal practice. It might be we're struggling, we're looking for that thing and it hasn't happened yet. Or the practice was working, but now it's fallen away and there's frustration because what happened to it? Where is it? Or maybe in our daily lives, it's just expectations that don't come to be, right? The goals we have that fall away. Or sometimes it's just challenge upon challenge that seem insurmountable. They just keep coming and we can feel really disconnected from that daily dragon, right? We don't necessarily feel its presence and its movement, and that knowing evaporates. So there's, in the Blue Cliff Record, the verse to the third case, Juedo writes, "For 20 years I have suffered bitterly. How many times I have gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you." As I've been playing with this, this is me talking to myself. There's the me saying, "Ugh, I've suffered bitterly all this time. I'm struggling. I'm trying to get through. It doesn't make sense. I can't get a hold of it again. I've lost it," whatever it might be. Then the other side of me that says, "How many times I have gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you to show you it's still here, that dragon. It has not left you." Right? Down in that deep cave, the Blue Dragon holds its mani jewel, the wish-fulfilling gem. And sometimes the story is we go down to the cave to try to get the jewel for ourselves and take it. But in experience, just going down into the cave and seeing the dragon there holding the jewel is enough. And that's what we do in meditation practice. Sitting meditation, where we get still and quiet. We're sinking down, going in to the Blue Dragon's cave, or at least towards it. We don't always make it all the way down. But in a situation such as ours, in a retreat like this, we're able to take that deep dive and see that that dragon and its jewel is still there, abiding, holding us, holding the jewel. It hasn't left us. We don't necessarily feel the connection, but we can drop in and see, oh yes, you are still here. And there's two different translations of this phrase from the verse. And I'm appreciating the different qualities that come forth from my own experience based on these translations. So the first one I said, you know, "For 20 years I have suffered bitterly," and that's this side of me. And the other side saying, "How many times I have gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you, and I will do it again and again." That part of me that says, "I'm happy to do it. I am loyal to you, and I will keep doing it as long as it's needed. No problem. Again and again. How many times I have gone down, and how many more times I will," right? Then there's this translation. "For 20 years I have struggled fiercely. How many times have I gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you?" That's a part of me saying, "Can you meet me where I'm at? Can you meet me halfway?" The part of me that goes down and says, "Look, there it is, there it is." And I have to come up again and again, and you get lost. Step this way some. Hey, take a trip down there with me sometime. We can do it together. Right? So both of those aspects, the loyal companion of myself that'll say, "No problem, I'll do it for as long as it takes." And the other one that says, "Meet me, come join me, you can step forth, maybe out of that place of the bitterness and the suffering and the struggle. We can swim down there together, see the jewel with all of our eyes." Yeah. So that first dragon, the daily dragon, I just call it like the abiding dragon. The second one, the blue dragon in the cave, is the resolute dragon. Yeah. Those are the words I put to them. But then we come to this next dragon that I don't have any kind of description for it because it has to do with dragon murmurings, which aren't easy to hear, and there's not really any sense being made, because what's going on? It's just a... So who knows what the quality of that dragon is. But I find that... Well, here's a phrase from the verse of Case 2 of the Blue Cliff record, also from Juedo, where he just says, "Dragon murmurings in a dried-up tree aren't used up." For me, these are the times of... Well, things are dried up. Maybe I've hit a plateau and don't seem to be going anywhere. The thing that nourished me and served me seems to have run out. And I'm feeling dry and disconnected again from that dragon. A bit lost. Weary. I'm thinking maybe that's the end. Because it seems to be all dried up. But even in such a state, the dragon murmurings aren't used up. And they're right there within the dried up tree. They are right here within me. Being still and quiet and settling in, I can hear them. Again, not necessarily words or meaning, just presence and companionship. And I know, oh, it's still here. Still here. Even now. Even when things don't seem so full and rich, when they seem pretty bleak, still here. It's like the dragon knows such times don't call for proclamations and great offerings. It calls for sweet companionship. That murmuring might just be the dragon taking a nap, talking in its sleep. I'm still here, but let's rest. Yeah. Let's rest together. And then we can find in there's commentary on this verse, some more solace in those murmurings. In one case, a student asked Zhishuang, "What is dragon murmurings in a dried up tree?" Zhishuang said, "I still have joy." Yeah. Not joy in reserve. Not like it's still there somewhere and it's waiting for you. Right here in the midst of the dryness, hearing the murmuring, there is joy. That strange feeling of joy and gratitude sometimes that you find meeting you when things aren't going well. But there it is, and you find, well, this is what it is to be alive, to go through such times. And there's joy naturally in that because it's existence. You are still alive. In this dryness, used upness, still alive, right? I still have joy right in the midst of it. And a student asked Cao Shan the same question. What is dragon murmurings in a dried up tree? Cao Shan said, "The bloodline is not cut off. That continuous thread, that continual companionship of the dragon has not been cut. The life of your practice, the life of your life, has not been severed. It goes on throughout it all. Flowing. Just sometimes it flows thin and murmurs versus roars, yeah. Hakuin, commenting on this particular line of the verse, he says, "The hollering in the Himalayas," which I was like, what is he talking about? So I looked up a bit. I don't have a clear idea, but Hakuin tells the story, and others do as well, about the historical Buddha experiencing his awakening in the Himalaya rather than down in Bodh Gaya. So they kind of position it as that's where it happened, up in those mountains. That just may be a shorthand version of saying in India where there are such mountains. But they focus there rather than bringing the whole continent in. Anyway, what I'm thinking that hollering is for me, what it showed up as is when the Buddha touched the earth, had his awakening and said, "All beings and I awaken together." That's the holler. He proclaimed it, echoing throughout the Himalayas. So, the hollering in the Himalayas and the teaching of Buddha's whole lifetime We're expounded from here. We're expounded from dragon murmurings in a dried up tree. That's what Hakuin proposes. And if the teachings of the Buddha's lifetime and the awakening itself came forth from such a place, I think we're in good shape. All the other stuff, the bountiful, rich times, that's just bonus. Yeah. Right there in that dried up place, full and complete, the teachings of a lifetime, rolling forth. Yes. So that's the three examples of aspects of dragon, or three different dragons, or however many dragons it may be. And there are plenty more to discover, which we get to in these days. You may already recognize other ones in your life. Keep company with them. Let them show you who and what they are, what they have to offer, and what you have to offer them, regardless of your state, your being, whatever's happening. Again, always connected, always being companion, never left alone. We and the dragon. Which brings to mind, at least for me, how do we work with these dragons? How might we invite them and encourage them, or just see them weaving throughout our lives? And there's unhelpful ways and helpful ways, and many of them that we already know, and many more unhelpful and helpful ways to discover, but I've got two that came to mind through stories that I was familiar with from encountering a variety of things over the years. And one is the story of the origins of the rivers in China. So it features the Jade Emperor, who is the ruler of the heavens. And that, to me, is my ego self. And there's a couple of deities here that the Jade Emperor was going to call upon. Servants of the ego, perhaps. Maybe they give a little side eye to the ego, say, okay. But, you know, they follow through anyway because it's the Jade Emperor calling out, yeah. And then there's four dragons who represent the Tao, the way, the deeper being, you know, beneath the riverbed, in that river, Abajo River. And I'll do the short version of the story. So there's these four dragons that play in the oceans and dance through the sky, just have a great time, and they're just over in the eastern sea, close to the mainland, and they have a great affection for the people who live on the land, and they delight in what the people do, and they want to, you know, be those companions, offering what they can offer. And they notice that at one point in time, the people are suffering. There's a drought. Water's drying up. So they talk amongst themselves and say, the people need water. We should go visit the Jade Emperor and just say, hey, this is what's going on. Can you help him out? And so they do. They kind of go to the palace and, with very little formality, burst in, and Jade Emperor is kind of put off by that. It's like, where's your decorum? Where's all that? They, you know, because they're dragons. They just come in and say, hey, the people are suffering. They could use some rain for their crops, something to refill their bellies. Could you help them out? The Jade Emperor just says, yeah, I can do that. You know, give me a few days, but I'll get it going. He says that just to appease them, because he doesn't feel that it's the dragon's place to come tell him what to do, you know, that ego self. So the dragons hear him say, yes, I'll do it. And they're, oh, great, thanks. And they take off back to the sky, back to the ocean, leaping and playing around and swimming and diving. And a day goes by, no rain. 3 days, no rain. 10 days, no rain. The Jade Emperor didn't follow through. And they're confused. But he said he would. Why isn't he doing it? And they get an inkling of knowing the Jade Emperor a little bit. Oh, we might know what's going on. So they talk amongst themselves and say, you know, we can take care of this. Let's each dive into the ocean and get a mouthful of water, and then fly to the heavens and spit it into the clouds and let the rain fall down. And they did that. Over and over, they got mouthful of water, spat it into the clouds in the sky, and the rain fell, and the people were nourished, and the crops began to come back. But the deity of the Eastern Sea went and told the Jade Emperor what had happened. So the Jade Emperor got pretty upset. It's like, not only did they come in here and tell me what to do the first time, they're defying my inaction, or my action as he saw it, by doing what they're doing now. So the Jade Emperor called upon the deity of the mountains and said, get four mountains and imprison the dragons beneath those mountains, one each. Crush them and keep them under there so they can no longer get out and cause havoc and do what I don't want them to do. So the deity of the mountains did such and put all four dragons underneath a mountain each. But being water beings, these dragons found a way to seep through the rocks and out into the plains and flow down into where the people lived and to nourish them and support them. And that's where the four major rivers of China came from. Those dragons being imprisoned, but still finding a way to get out and provide the nourishment they need. They needed, they wanted to provide the nourishment that people needed. So for me, that's when I'm trying, when the ego co-opts my practice or has its idea of, oh, this is what it's useful for, and tries to get a hold of the dragons that are accompanying me and make them do my bidding or, you know, serve my projects, which limits them, right? But the dragons always find a way through. Again and again, their watery ways win out. And despite how much that Jade Emperor part of me might be about it, in the end, it's always a beneficial thing, what they offer and how things end up. And I can get over myself some, maybe get over myself a lot, and appreciate them. And there I tried it again, but again, the dragons always win out. Yeah. Related to this is the other way of working with the dragons as river has to do with Yao, one of the ancient emperors. There was Yao and Shun. They were two great companion emperors. And this verse I'm going to recite comes from Dongshan's five positions. There are two different cycles of five positions. The first is the universal and the particular, which we are more familiar with. But there's a second cycle of enlightenment and merit. And this is the first verse of the second cycle, the position of orientation. It says, the Buddha transmit the way of Emperor Yao. He governed with propriety and bent the dragon. He found culture flourishing in the marketplace and the sacred dynasty celebrated everywhere. So this phrase, bent the dragon, has to do with the fact that the Yellow River would often flood, overflow its banks and ruin the croplands, ruin things again and again. People had to move and rebuild. But no matter what they did, the dragon would, the silt would shift and it would find its way, and it kept happening, it kept happening. But Yao devised a system of locks and channels and a way to bend the dragon, which didn't put it beneath the mountain, didn't try to crush it. Said, you have power here, this river dragon. You have something to offer. You need a little help in how to channel it so it's beneficial for people. And because of Yao's work of bending the dragon, the people were again nourished. The crops weren't flooded. And as it says here, culture flourished in the marketplace, and the sacred dynasty was celebrated everywhere. That's what I can do in my life, and you can do in yours. When you meet that dragon, that question, what does the dragon want? How can I help the dragon? How might we help each other? Let's meet, let's collaborate, Don't be overwhelmed by its power, but don't deny its power. Nor do you deny your own. But you realize we can work together, we can partner, and do a dance, bending the dragon, letting it flow, letting it offer what it wants to offer, and partnering, co-creating the nourishment, the flourishing, and the celebration. Those are two ways I thought of how we work with dragons. Again, more for you to discover. You may already know, and there's more to come, yeah? So look deeply at that and wonder and discover. And I want to bring in the story of the Dragon Gate, which you may have heard of. This exists in the Yellow River. There's a natural place called Dragon Gate. It's where the channel becomes narrow and this waterfall rushes down. And the legend is, carp swim upstream and they go to the waterfall. And if they can get over the waterfall, swim up and jump into the pool that waits above, they will be transformed into dragons. All that struggling upstream to jump in there and become a dragon. So this is a place of transformation, yeah? The transformation of the dragon, the transformation into dragon. And it does feel like that sometimes, right? Like we struggle upstream. And sometimes we leap over the waterfall, we land in the pool, and something is transformed, and a dragon self finds itself within the territory of us. But not just once. It seems like we have to do that again and again and again, yeah. Many different dragon selves are birthed as we go through our many transformations. But as I considered this story, I was thinking, there's more than just one way of having that transformation happen. I mean, you have to get through the waterfall into the pool, is the story, but there's different ways to get through that waterfall, different ways to transform. So one is that way of the struggle upstream and the leaping and the determination and the perseverance to keep going and keep going. And something is transformed. But there's another, well, there's a few other ways I've thought of. One calls to mind Lin Ji's statement of face the world and walk crosswise. So you meet the waterfall. Instead of trying to go up it, you can find there's footholds beneath it. There's rocks there that you can land on and go across the waterfall. Right? Not overwhelmed by it, but not needing to conquer it. You can find a way to go crosswise, and you are transformed by doing such. You might even find there's a nice stable rock that you can sit upon and just root yourself and allow the waters to pour over you. That transforms the waterfall. No longer something again to conquer, to overcome, something to sit in the midst of and allow it to wash through you and over you. And be transformed into dragon. And then a final way I thought of was when you just turn the other way, lean back and let the waves take you. Transform the challenge of the waterfall into the journey. Let me ride these waves as dragon. I don't need to get to the pool. I can face this way and flow with it. Lean into it and be transformed. So all those ways, I think, are ways of dragon transformation. Yeah, it's good to have options. Good to challenge the stories we're given as this is how you do it. It's like, well, let me look at that. So I invite you, look at that. Look at the own transformations in your life, and how did it feel to you before that waterfall? Did you overcome it? Learn to abide within it? Cross through it or ride it? Or what else? And then to close, a couple of verses or koans. Well, we'll see what turns out. I'm not going to do the whole thing because it's a lot of words, but This is mainly, to me, what came up with riding those waves back into the river. And considering those hardships and the challenges, the struggles, and the delights that maybe I experienced but lost, couldn't hold on to. All those, you know, the fish, the carp that turned into dragons, but there's all these fish of my life, those smaller things, the struggles, the strife. And there's also snakes that become dragons as well. So this again challenges the story that we need to go from carp to dragon, or we need to get from snake to dragon. There's a different way to do it. And it has to do with that transformation again about not accepting the waterfall on its straightforward terms. And for me, it was flowing down the river, but I guess it could exist in any of the other ways, and even in the way of diving up into the pool. But there's a line from a koan where, well, there's a question, a statement. Manjushri asked Wuzhou, who had come from a place of practice, what's it like where you practice? How are people gathered there? How are the assemblies? And how are the teachings being maintained? And Wuzhou said, well, there's 300 people here, 500 there, and, you know, in this last age of the Dharma, monastics barely keep the precepts. He's kind of got a Jade Emperor feel. He's judging and looking at things and measuring them. Yeah, it's kind of this way and that way, yeah. Then he asked Manjushri, well, how are things here? How are the teachings being maintained here? What is the practice in this place of Manjushri's crystal palace? And Manjushri said, ordinary people and saints live together. Dragons and snakes mix. And to me, this is the compassion that we're speaking of. To transform as dragon and then continue to hang out with your snakes. You don't leave them behind and say, I've got a new life now. The dragon returns to mix with the snakes. Big, generous heart, that is, yeah? Ordinary people and saints live together right here. Dragons and snakes mix right here. And then I'll close with this, which is of the same spirit. Someone asked, what is my heart mind? An ancestor replied, all the worlds in the universe are your heart mind. If that's so, then there's really no particular place for my body to be. That's exactly the place for your body to be. Where is that? The great ocean, vast and deep. I don't understand. Dragons and fish play freely, leaping and diving. Right here. So, leap and dive and play and swim and fly and explore and discover. For you, this dragon or these dragons. Just take a moment, a few moments right now. Settle into where you are. Feel the presence of it, the dragon presence. How is it with you right here and now? How close, how far, how lively, how still, all those qualities. How is the dragon with you right here and now? Keep doing that in our walking meditations, our sitting meditations. Our dinner, lunch, and breakfast meditations. Our wandering through the ancient land of this place meditations. take some time, take some breaths, settle into wherever you are, and wonder, how is it with me and the dragon right now?